Welcome to Flipper Talks, a family law podcast. We are Flipper, the Family Law Practitioners Association of Queensland. Family law is a wonderfully rewarding career, but is not without its challenges. Join us as we explore the issues that impact on the practice and well-being of family law practitioners. We hope our episodes will not only inform and inspire you, but encourage you to reach your potential. Enjoy this episode.
Hello, thank you for joining us today. My name is Helen Davison. I'm a barrister and a proud member of the Flipper Board. Today I have the pleasure of interviewing Deanna Musumeci. Deanna has recently been appointed as one of the regional members of the Flipper Board, along with James Bailey. Deanna is a barrister. She was called to the Queensland Bar in October 2021, and prior to that she was a solicitor for 8 years in Townsville with a practice in family law and commercial litigation. Deanna specialises in family, all areas of family law, child protection law and domestic violence. Welcome to Flipper Talks.
Thanks, Helen.
Great for you to be here today. And as I said, you are one of our very special regional members. What is it like living in the regions?
I can't speak of it highly enough, but also equally sometimes not as great either. The best thing about living in the regions, I think, for me is the ease of my lifestyle. My family and my husband's family all live there. So in terms of childcare and meeting and visiting friends and family, it's just so easy to get around. But also living right on the coast, on the beach there in Townsville, it's just scenic and so beautiful. We are remarkably lucky. But also that presents a challenge as well, being so far away from Brisbane in those central hubs is somewhat challenging, but I guess that laid-back lifestyle is really overwhelmingly the positive aspect of living out up in Townsville, yeah.
Yeah, it sounds amazing. So your chambers are in Townsville CBD, is that right?
Yes.
Okay. So tell me what it's like being a lawyer in a regional town.
It's great. At the risk of saying collegiality too much today, that's precisely what it is. Everyone knows everybody, and the mutual respect and regard we have for our colleagues is so paramount and important, particularly in such a small town, or relatively smaller town in any event. It makes it easier to do our jobs and do it well when we have trust and can debrief appropriately with our colleagues and call them friends in that respect. So I find that an immeasurable advantage, having that level of collegiality in the regions.
And what does that mean on a practical level? Does that mean if you have a dispute, you're more likely to pick up the phone, or, you know, particularly when you are a solicitor in Townsville, rather than maybe firing off a nasty email or something like that?
Sometimes the way I see it is sometimes the nasty, in inverted commas, email will still be sent, but it's them picking up the phone to have a frank conversation about the reasons why it was framed in the way it was, but also being able to get to the bottom of the actual issues in dispute. So still discharging your duties to your client and to the court, but doing it in a level that makes it easier, especially in family law, as we know, which is highly emotional, very high stakes in terms of property and children, the most important things in a person's lives. Being able to get them through, that is your client, in a relatively unscathed way does involve being able to pick up the phone and have a conversation with your colleague about what are we really talking about here, and how do we fix this? How do we resolve this in a least disruptive manner as we possibly can?
Yeah, and I guess when you know the people, and as you say, it's a much smaller probably group of solicitors and barristers that you're dealing with, so you're probably more familiar with each other to feel confident to be able to have, you know, without prejudice conversations and things like that. Whereas I think sometimes in Brisbane, it's not that people are not collegial or anything like that, but sometimes if you don't know the other person, you don't know how they're going to take a phone call and things like that, which is maybe which leads to just becoming letter writing wars and email writing wars because people don't have the confidence because they don't know the person to pick up the phone, perhaps.
Yes, that's precisely right. Having said that, though, my friends in Brisbane, my colleagues in Brisbane, at the bar at least, we're able to have those discussions and those conversations. But it's easier when you can put a name to the face, and you can do that a lot easier, I think, in Townsville and or in the regions itself. So, yes, I agree with that.
I often think about that at the bar compared to being a solicitor even in Brisbane. We are so collegial, I think, in the Queensland Family Law Bar, and we often are able, and I think that we show that because we're able to quite often resolve really difficult matters because we do so. I think perhaps the theory is we do a lot in person.
Yes.
When we meet together, it's at court, it's face-to-face, and I think there is something in that getting a deal done, being able to have those conversations and doing it and it almost forces you to, if you're not maybe ordinarily collegial, to be, because it's all being done in person.
Yeah, you're less likely to fire off an angry tone conversation than you would two-finger typing an angry email when you're doing it with someone face-to-face. So I agree with that entirely. You're not going to raise your voice at somebody in the steps of the courtroom, but the tone of an email can be conveyed when you don't have that in-person aspect to it. So doing things in person absolutely helps that, yes.
Mm. So you came to the bar in 2021. What made you want to make that change?
I didn't like being a lawyer, to be frank. I'm still not quite sure what I didn't like about being a lawyer. I put it down to the day-to-day going-ons of being a lawyer, in the sense that the incessant emails from clients about things that I thought weren't necessarily an important issue, but nevertheless they would raise on a daily basis, rising costs as a result of that, and then complaining in the end about their bill, that would always really irk me. But also I wanted sort of more for my career. I knew from a very young age, and my parents tell me all the time, that I would always say to them from a very young age that I wanted to be in the law. There was, my mum says, I don't know how the truth for it or not, that I would talk about being in court and speaking to judges and that sort of thing. So I knew from a young age what I wanted to do. And I think I got to a point in my career as a solicitor that I didn't know where to from here, in the sense that it wasn't appealing to me to go out on my own and start my own firm or become a partner in a firm. And then if not that, then what? What was the next step? And so I remember actually having a conversation after a matter just before I went on maternity leave with my third and final baby, with a barrister, after we had won what I would describe as a David and Goliath type matter in the commercial space. And we were talking about it afterwards, and she had said to me, oh, why aren't you happy? You're about to go on mat leave, have a baby. We just won this awesome matter. And I just sort of said to her, well, I don't know what to do when I come back from mat leave. And she sort of said, well, why don't you go to the bar? And it, like when you're a child and you say to your parents, I want to be a princess when I grow up, I want to be an astronaut, going to the bar was such a far-fetched idea and one that I thought wasn't within my reach. But when I looked into it a bit more, I remember going home to my husband and saying, this particular barrister said I should go to the bar. And quite thankfully, I have a very supportive husband. And he said, well, why not? And I couldn't really answer why not, because the truth was there was no reason why I couldn't. So I think then and there, July of 2020 is when I made the decision, to go to the bar. And a plan was hatched. My husband, so I was just about to have my third baby. My husband decided that he would stay home for 2021 with that baby and help with the children in that respect, so I could study for the bar exams and then go on the course. So the plan was hatched, and that's what we did.
Yeah, amazing. And just talking about the course, because the course is full on, it's 6 weeks, it's difficult for anybody. But being regionally based, you know, what are the additional challenges for somebody regionally based?
Well, the obvious one was the care arrangements for the children. So I was still, when I did the bar exams, which were in, I think, April of that year, I was still breastfeeding. So obviously that presented a bit of a challenge because the bar exams are traditionally held in Brisbane and I'm obviously in Townsville. And how I would make that practically work when my child, my infant son, was not taking a bottle, it could only be breastfed, that was a very obvious, real issue. Thankfully, and I bring it all the way back to one word, which is support. Thankfully, the Bar Association were so kind as to let me do the exams remotely, which allowed me to breastfeed my child whilst I did the exams. And then in terms of going and actually participating in the bar course, that was another unique challenge because I still had my children, all three of them at that point, at home, and again without support of my family and friends at times. I wouldn't have been able to get to Brisbane. And then luckily for us, my husband, we are a two-income family and had some savings behind us. So cost is a significant, I think, barrier, particularly for women in the regions in coming to the bar. If you're a single mother or a single father and have care responsibilities, then that six-week course is a significant issue. I mean, you have to find accommodation for 6 weeks, which either for most people, if you don't have family or friends in Brisbane, would require 6 weeks of paid accommodation. Mm. The lack of income, if you don't have leave entitlements or another income stream other than your own, that's another obvious issue. And then of course, the loneliness of being away from your family. They're all significant challenges. But again, like I say, support. I was just internally grateful and thankful that I've got family and friends in Brisbane. My husband, like I say, was able to take the time off work for that year and have the care responsibilities primarily of the children, plus my family and friends in Townsville who also assisted where they could. That made it doable. But for many, it's not, which is really a shame because the bar, as I see it, represents all of us and not everybody has those same privileges that we do. So it's a bit of a shame that that demographic of people may have those significant barriers and then we don't see that representation at the bar.
Mm. No, I think they're really good points. And I just want to shout out and give you, recognise you, because when I was doing the bar course with you, you were a huge inspiration to me. We all have challenges, as I said. I think anyone that does the bar course, they say it was easy, they're most likely lying. It's a huge challenge, but I could see the additional challenges that you had, and you were, hugely inspirational, not only to me, but I think a lot of women on the course, and no doubt those probably listening to this. So, I just want to recognise that. And certainly there was huge challenges, and I didn't even know about a lot of those things, but could imagine, obviously, coming from the regions. I hope it is somewhat inspirational if there's people listening that are in the regions that, it's a whole lot of work and a lot of organisation in terms of all the support structures. But I think one of the things that we spoke about at that time and you encouraged me that you can do it.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
That's the biggest barrier, I think, is sometimes ourselves. Like I say, you know, even the thought of going to the bar at first was just likening it to, oh, I'm going to be a princess when I grow up. It's not like that at all. We can do these things. And I think it's really unfortunate that, you know, our first thought, and when I say our, I think it's usually women, to be quite frank, our first thought is, well, I can't and these are the reasons why, but that's just simply not the case.
Mm, yeah, that's right. Yeah. And I think it's when people talk to me about coming to the bar, particularly women, and sometimes it's people ask me a question who I don't know and I don't know anything about their background or their life or anything like that. But my general advice is if it's something that you really want to do, do it. Mm. You know, make the preparation, do what you need to do, you know, I tell them how, you know, difficult the bar exam is and the bar course. But I say, that's something you've always wanted to do. Just go and do it.
Yes.
I mean, the worst thing that's going to happen is you go and do it and then you decide it's actually not for you or it doesn't work out. But I think if that's something that, and for a lot of people I hear, you know, it's something they've always wanted to do, I think, well, just give it a go.
Yeah,
you
know, absolutely.
Just try it. There's no harm in trying. And certainly, yeah, there's a lot of preparation that goes, and particularly when you've got children and the like, you know, there's a lot of thought that needs to go out and making sure everyone's okay. so you can do your thing, which mothers and fathers would know all about. But, yeah, it's just about sometimes taking the dive, taking the jump and doing it.
Yeah, it's a scary thing to do, but it almost inevitably always does pay off, and it certainly has for me. I mean, very scary quitting my job and then trying to back myself to give it a go, but would never have thought I could have achieved the things that I have so far in my career, my very short career. So, yeah, it certainly pays off.
Mm. Now, that wasn't the end of your challenges.
No, it wasn't. So, went to the bar in October 2021 and had a relatively good start, I thought, to my time at the bar. Wasn't wanting for any work for any lengthy period of time. And I think about a year into it, around October, as I was saying earlier, I got a phone call from a top tier firm wanting to brief me in a complex family law matter, which I thought was really, really cool. I'd only been at the bar a year. I was still in Townsville and hadn't had much work outside of Townsville. So for a Brisbane phone call from a top tier firm, that was really exciting to me. I got that phone call in the car on my way to a GP appointment off the back of having had a ultrasound and biopsy on a lump that I had about a few weeks earlier, and in fact maybe months earlier. I had found a lump in my breast and hung up on that phone call as I pulled up to the GP, went to my appointment and got told that I'd been diagnosed with breast cancer. So that happened October 2022, yes.
Oh, you poor thing. And, I mean, I don't want to give away your age, but you're obviously quite young. So that no doubt came as a huge shock to you.
Yes. So it absolutely was. So much so, in fact, that my brother, who is a doctor in Brisbane, had asked me if I was taking anyone to that appointment with my GP. And I do remember saying to him flippantly, no, why would I do that? Like, just why? And then in the GP appointment, I was by myself. She wasn't the doctor who was seeing me, wasn't my regular GP. So I didn't have that much of a rapport with her at that point. And when she told me, I just remember I couldn't speak or understand what she was saying anymore. So I called my brother, put him on loudspeaker and just said to him, can you please just listen to what this doctor has to say and tell me later? So, yeah, a bit of a shock. Breast cancer does run in my family. My, and I'll probably mention her again later, my auntie Pina was diagnosed when she was about 40 or maybe a bit older than that, and my grandmother also was diagnosed with breast cancer. But me, and I'll give away my age, was 32 at the time, 33, 32, so quite young.
Yeah, no, just devastating. And, you know, it's devastating for anyone, but probably particularly really scary when you've got three little children.
Yeah, absolutely. That period after being diagnosed until I was what they call staged, so undertaking further tests to see whether the lump in my breast had actually spread beyond my breast and whether it was then in my lymph nodes or organs and that sort of stuff. The period between then and that PET scan was quite unbearable. And in fact, even seeing my surgeon, my breast surgeon for the first time, was quite unbearable because it's the unknowns that caused the most distress, I think, because yes, at the time my baby, the youngest, was 2, and then my daughter was 3, and Franklin, my oldest son, was 4 turning 5. Mm. So quite scary, to say the least, to not know whether or not I would live to see them for when they got much older than that. But thankfully, firstly, I had a fabulous medical team. So my auntie, who I mentioned before, I say she shared her medical team with me, but told me about her breast surgeon who, when she had first been diagnosed, assisted her then, and also her oncologist. So I got a hold of those two people. The breast surgeon, Dr. Sally Mead, is a Brisbane-based surgeon. And so that required me then to meet her in Brisbane for my, which was first a lumpectomy and then later to be a double mastectomy with reconstruction surgery. So she was fabulous. And then also my oncologist, who was Townsville-based, who then helped me through, I think it was about 6 months' worth of chemotherapy treatment. So that was a fabulous medical team that I had on board, but also a lot of, again, support in that of my family and friends and ultimately colleagues. But back to what I was saying earlier, I was very lucky, in relative terms, I suppose, to have been diagnosed at a very early stage in this breast cancer in its life, I suppose, at stage two. So what that meant was that while the lump in my breast was relatively small, I think it was under 2 centimetres, it had spread beyond the breast and it had gone into my lymph nodes. I think they ended up finding 2 of my lymph nodes had invasive cancer. And so as a result of that, although it sounds really scary, it certainly wasn't the worst outcome for me, with very good prognosis, if I followed the treatment, which I ultimately did. Every day of the week I would. So,
But through all of that, you continued to work.
Yes. So I did. I made, I think very early on, once that initial shock, which it didn't wear off, but once it sort of minimised, once I realised what the plan was, and which was a good plan backed by really good doctors, and I felt very supported. Once that shock wore down, I made a very conscious decision that I didn't, maybe naively, didn't want it to affect my life in a way that would mean that my treatment would negate the reason why I wanted the treatment in the first place. Like, I wanted to live normally, as normal as I possibly could. And for me, that meant a number of things. It meant being there for my babies, my children, being a good wife to my husband, and having a sound relationship with my family and my friends. But it also, importantly, meant the further development of my career. It's something that kept me, or made me, me. And so I made that conscious decision to try and not let it affect me and live my life as normally as possible. The difficulty with that, of course, is that it was going to affect my life, and it certainly did. But again, I say luckily, and I mean that in the relative sense again. Luckily, around the time of my diagnosis, so I had the lumpectomy in November, and I had to wait a bit of time before then I started my chemo regime. That happens to be around the Christmas closure period. Mm-hmm. So the worst of my chemotherapy was the first lot of chemo that I was on, and that involved 4 rounds spaced fortnightly of what they call the Red Devil, because it's in the name itself, it was pretty awful, and the side effects were not the best. And that happened, though, over the course of the Christmas closure period. So whilst I was feeling quite rubbish for maybe 1 out of the 2 weeks, it wasn't so bad that it meant that I couldn't continue. The children were home from school, which meant my husband was on leave, and friends and family were also available to assist. In fact, every Friday was my chemo day, and that would involve dropping the children, or being picked up from our place when I had chemo by my mother-in-law, my own mother, or my father, who would have the children overnight, because the Friday typically was the worst day for me in terms of side effects. And that could be done easily because school was out. And then also people were home from work and on holidays. And then I guess further, once the closure of the courts happened over the Christmas period, people were on holiday anyway. So my practice itself, which was important to me, wasn't so affected. There were jobs that I had to hand back, briefs that I had to hand back, because I was still was unsure, unclear how the chemo would affect me, and I didn't want to be sounds weird that this was my thought process. I didn't want to be unreliable because, again, like I say, the reason I was fighting so hard to get rid of this disease was because I wanted to live my life, and part of my life was my career. So at the end of it all, if my practice had suffered or I had developed a reputation, rightly or wrongly, for being unreliable, those sorts of things, then I didn't want that to be the legacy after I beat cancer. I now know that that wouldn't have been the case. And of course, the profession were ever so kind to me throughout this whole period. But they were just the thoughts that I had in my mind at the time. So over the Christmas period, it was relatively easy. Then when I had the 12 weeks of weekly chemotherapy that followed, that did obviously coincide with, you know, going back to the courts reopening, and in family law, typically that is sometimes the busiest period of the year. But thankfully, that chemotherapy that I then undertook wasn't as bad in terms of its side effects in affecting my cognitive ability or being able to manage my file and workload. The only problem was that every Friday was chemo day, and I made it a very, again, conscious effort and decision that on Fridays, while I would accept work Monday to Thursday, on Fridays was my chemo day, and I would just not work on Fridays. It's not something that I typically told people that I was going to do. It just so happened that that's how it worked out. That was really important to me to maintain my work, so that, like I say, when I got better, because I was going to get better, that I had, you know, I didn't have any lapse or lag, and I could just hit the ground running still and make it all worthwhile, I suppose. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think you're amazing. I mean, as you say, things seem to just work out, but and when you talk about being lucky, I think that's you. You do have a positive mindset, and I think you try and see the positive in things, which is amazing and a credit to you. Something we were talking about before the interview, and I know it's something that I've seen you shared on social media and the like, but that importance for women checking and then, you know, getting, if they find something they think could be a lump or a bit suspicious, going and getting that looked at.
Yes.
Can you share a bit about that?
Yeah, so obviously I'm the extreme case in terms of it ended up being cancer, but it's just so important not to ignore your health. It's annoying and it's inconvenient to take time out of work to get a blood test or get an ultrasound or just go see your GP and just check in to make sure if, you know, those weird niggling aches and pains are something that you should be worried about. It's inconvenient, it's annoying. But what's worse is taking every Friday off work to go get your chemotherapy treatment or taking 2 weeks out of your year to fly down to Brisbane and get a double mastectomy and reconstruction surgery and then recover from it in hospital alone, away from your family and friends.
Oh, yeah, I think that's so important, particularly I think working parents, we're also busy. We've got a million and one things to do, and usually we don't prioritise. Our health comes last. You know, usually it's the case if one of our kids needs a doctor, you know, we're making sure that they get there and things like that, and their health is attended to, or a relative or something like that. But you say, particularly at the bar, you're running your own business, so but same for an employee, you know, a solicitor has to ask time off work or come in late and things like that. It can sometimes feel like I'm just not going to deal with that today. I've got too much on. But as you say, sometimes those things go away, but sometimes they don't. And, yeah, the consequences can be worse. Or if something like mental health You don't get help, it can become a chronic mental health condition as opposed to something that was quite mild, perhaps. So great advice we all need to take, including myself. Now, as I said, it's been wonderful having you join us on the Flipper board as a regional member. And I know that you and James Bailey have been working very hard on all things regional in the family law space. What have you and James got planned for this coming year for our regional membership?
So in particular, and I'll talk to my little project more, is the Flipper in the Tropics event. So we're looking in October, bringing to Mission Beach a day program, basically, of things affecting family law practitioners in the space of family domestic violence and other important topics that we face on a daily basis in our practices. It was in Mission Beach a few years ago as well. We had a similar event and it was just so well received. And I participated as a delegate back then as opposed to organising the event itself. And it was just so well done and some really good feedback. So I'm really, really looking forward to that and the program we can put together. So that's my little major little project, I think, with the help of James and our subcommittee, because I need all the help I can get. And then other little along the way events in terms of social events and other little CPD things for our regional members, which is so important because it's hard to get down to Brisbane. It's hard to travel around the place when you're in the regions. Flights are expensive and accommodation and all the things that can affect us being so far away from Southeast Queensland. So really looking forward to our little program for the year ahead.
Yeah, amazing. And as I said, we've got a really strong focus in Flipper with our regional membership, and it's great to see what you and James are doing. I would also like to recognise Diane Rule, who was our who you've replaced as regional member. Diana retired from the board after many years of diligent service on the Flipper board, and is a real supporter of our regional members. So I just wanted to give her thank her for her years of service on the Flipper board
and ongoing when she quite helpfully messages me or returns my emails about some question that I have. So thank you, Diane. Yes.
Amazing. Can I ask you about being a mum and being a barrister? Do you get a lot of questions about how do you do it?
Yes, I do. It is a question that's asked often and usually for what I think are good intentions, obviously coming from a place of curiosity, because I can accept from the outside looking in, working in the jobs that we do, which are high demand, stressful, particularly in family law, the issues that we face as in our practice when we have children, I suppose people can't help but feel that that might affect you in some way, shape or form. So I do think the question comes from a genuine place of curiosity, but it's a hard one to answer because I fall into the trap of answering probably too truthfully. And when people ask me how do you do it, I say, well, I don't. I personally don't do it. I have a lot of support. I have the support in the form of my my husband, who's for all intents and purposes my partner at home, and I mean in the sense of the equal share of the workload in the house and the care of the children, but also my family. I rely heavily on the support of my family, who I'm eternally grateful for, because I could just simply not do what I do without their offering to pick up the children or have them for sleepovers, particularly when I was unwell, and that sort of thing. So I don't do it particularly well, I think. I try to very hard, of course, and inevitably sometimes I won't get that mix right. So I will be ignoring my children at home because I desperately need to read a brief, or I will be ignoring the brief because I'm desperately trying to get my children to school on time, that sort of thing. But I certainly try, and it's a really hard balance. But what other choice do we have but to get it right to the best of our ability, you know? So it's difficult, but it's really important to me that I again, made a conscious decision very early on when I was having my children that I wanted to show them, firstly, what a good relationship looks like. And again, in our work, we see what the bad ones look like. And I desperately did not want to model that for my kids. And so the equal share of the workload, mental load, physically as well, you know, picking up the kids, dropping them off to school between my husband and I is really, really important to me, because I especially want my boys to know that that's the sort of thing that they need to be doing in supporting their partners and kids, if they choose to have a partner and child. But also for my daughter, I want her to know that there are options for her. She doesn't have to have a job, a career. She can be a stay-at-home mother, equally as important as each other, but the option is there for her. And it's not something that will be decided for her, but something she decides for herself, which is really, really important for me personally in doing what I do, is making sure that my kids know that.
And what would you say to maybe a solicitor who's a mum who's listening and has dreams and thoughts about going to the bar? I mean, how do you think that the bar, particularly the family law bar, is that a good place for a mother, in your opinion?
I don't know there's a good place for anyone in our job, in the sense that the content of what we see and the matters that we deal with are quite confronting. I have said this, I think, before to you, Helen, in particular. I think family law makes me a better mum and a better wife, because I can see the bad and I try desperately to avoid the bad things that our clients and their former partners seem to get themselves into. But also, coming, especially in the regions, and I'm talking in particular about Townsville, my colleagues are all somewhat in the same boat, I think, especially in family law. Their fathers, their mothers, their partners, not everyone is, but we all have an understanding and appreciation of the role in our personal lives. And certainly if you're a solicitor thinking about being in this space, in the family law space, and becoming a mother or a father, having children, it's equally as good as it is bad, or can be bad. But, you know, I don't think that I'm an overly anxious mother. My husband may have a different view about that. But I certainly see the matters I take on and make mental notes, take away mental notes, I suppose, about how to be better as a mum and a partner. Don't always get it right, that's for sure. No one can. But at least what's that saying? When you know better, you do better. Mm. And that's certainly something that I take away from my job and appreciate, is that I can know better and then certainly be better.
Mm. And I think there's certainly, particularly in parenting matters, there's certain advantages of, and I don't want to take it away from my colleagues who don't have children, but there's certainly obviously advantages of having children and actually being in the thrust of rearing those children.
Yes.
In the sense of, I've certainly been in the room where there's three counsel, three solicitors, and being the only parent in the room and going, actually, those arrangements that you're coming up with, they're not practical. Mm. Talking about four kids, you've got one at high school, one in kindy, one in school, and you've got, a changeover at 3 o'clock. Sorry, how does that actually work? We're going to have to rework that a little bit, or just the practical aspects. I think having being a parent can actually be to our advantage.
Yes.
And we need all the advantages.
Yes.
we can
splitting Christmas, pick up at 2 o'clock in the afternoon on Christmas Day, or sometimes 12 o'clock on Christmas Day. That's my favorite sort of example of that. The children, or anyone having Christmas lunch would know, trying to pry away young children from their family and presence, and playing with the cousins and having a lunch at 12 o'clock, trying to pry them away from that's always going to be a recipe for disaster. But equally so, though, it's always good, and again, not to take away from our colleagues who don't have children, because that perspective is also equally as important. Like I say, I try not to be overly anxious mum, and I certainly sometimes do get very grounded by my colleagues who say, well, I don't think that that's actually a realistic issue or consideration for these reasons. And that perspective is always so enlightening. And then again, like I say, take a mental note and go home and apologize to my children for thinking differently. So, I mean, the breadth of opinions and the breadth of experience, whether you have children or not, certainly assists. But yes, I'll take the wins where I can, the advantages where I can, and having kids certainly does make me see matters in a different light.
Yeah, that's right. And I think too, one thing about the bar being a parent is, although we work extremely hard, extremely long hours, we do, you know, it is our own practice, it is our own business, and so that does come with a degree of flexibility as well. So I know it's certainly my practice where there's something important in one of my children's lives that I'll do whatever, as long as I have advance notice, I'll try and do whatever I can to be there for them, you know, in the same school holidays and things like that. So I think there are some advantages in that respect of being at the bar and being a parent and having a degree of flexibility.
Yeah, well, it's helpful not having an employer to answer to, that's for sure. I mean, asking for permission to leave the workplace so that you can take the children to swimming carnivals or take the children to their extracurricular activities, of which my children have many, it would be really challenging, I think, now. Particularly when I went to the bar, my children were still very young, and so we weren't in the throes of the dancing 5 days a week, gymnastics, soccer, all those sorts of things. And now, knowing that I can, if my timetable allows me to do so, which of course I'm in control of, I think, maybe superficially, but having control of your timetable and your diary means that you can space out time or carve out time to do those things, and then you catch up on work later and you're working for yourself, so it makes it inherently easier to do, or that pill easier to swallow when you're up at late at night finishing off the work that you didn't do in the earlier that evening or afternoon because you were doing personal matters or tending to the children or other personal issues in your life, because you're doing it for yourself. That was one thing, in fact, I found challenging as a solicitor. Whilst I loved my workplace and where I worked, I found it really hard to grapple with the thought that I was working late into the evening for somebody else, which meant that I was, you know, not with my children or not fully present with my husband and children or family. That was always really hard. But doing it for yourself is a bit different. It makes it easier to do it that way.
Yeah, amazing. Well, thank you so much, Sienna, for coming and speaking to us today. You've covered some really important topics. So, yes, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Helen. And just before I go, I would just like to really dedicate my talk with you today, in particular about my cancer experience, to a few people. My auntie, firstly, who sadly passed away from breast cancer, a really long, long battle with breast cancer in November of last year. My auntie Pina, as I lovingly referred to her, was an endless source of strength for me, particularly when I was doing chemo. She was in the chair next to me, also undertaking her chemotherapy treatment. She's my little guardian angel now, but I'd like to dedicate it to her. But also, you mentioned I'm very positive, and that's in part thanks to the women before me and men before me that I know who had breast cancer, but also in particular my dear friend Alicia, who was diagnosed with stage 4 ovarian cancer when we were much younger, back in 2016, and she's been living with that stage 4 diagnosis for quite some time. And so when I was first diagnosed, she taught me a thing or two about how to live my life and live it well, in which I have been doing, and she continues to do. So I'd just like to thank those two people in particular.
Thank you for sharing that, Deanna. Well, thank you everyone for joining us today. I hope you've enjoyed listening.
Thank you for listening to Flipper Talks, a family law podcast. We hope you enjoyed the podcast today. We confirm that the information we discussed today was just that, information for educational and entertainment purposes only. It is not specific advice. If something discussed has you considering whether you should take steps, it is important to make sure you get professional advice about your unique situation before you proceed, whether that be legal, financial, accounting, medical, or other advice. Please reach out to Flipper if there's another topic you'd like explored, and if you know someone who might benefit from the show, remember to tell them about it. Thank you for listening.